Welcome, everyone, to the Perceptive Podcast. I'm Josh Beiser, and we have a great cast for you tonight. Join me this week. Recently, he was featured on our Game Wisdom Roundtable cast, and he's here to talk to us about his latest game. From Zachtronics, please welcome Zach Barth.
Hello.
Hi, Zach. It's great to have you back on.
I'm really excited.
So, as I just said, you're here to talk about your latest game. For the folks listening, could you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so Infinifactory, I guess when you're hearing it, it'll be coming out very soon. It's a it's actually the first time I've gotten to pitch it. So it's the honest, simple pitch, I think, is that it's space chem in 3D, right? So mm-hmm. we've taken sort of that, like, the kind of design based, engineering-y, you know, building stuff puzzle game feeling of space chem and turned it into a really way more immersive 3D experience where I think kind of a better theme, instead of, you know, designing chemicals or whatever, you're building factories that mm-hmm. really physical factories that they kind of push things together and weld them and you know, like building these giant like assemblages and building things starting with very small blocks.
Cool.
I guess it's kind of a block game also. I don't know. I don't really know what that means anymore, but it is kind of block game like also, which is really cool because it makes it really easy to build because everything's on this cool 3D grid and you can just throw together your factory in 3D.
Mm-hmm. Regarding the game design, I know with the original Space Chem, you had the inside, like the different reactors where you're combining the elements to create various elements. And then you had the factory management, sort of like the macro layer when you're trying to move your newly created compounds to and from. Is Infinifactory sort of like that macro level, or do you have like the micro where you're going inside the factories to alter things?
It's kind of in between. So mm-hmm. there's definitely just one level, right? You don't mm-hmm. have like the zoom in where you're solving mm-hmm. a puzzle and then you zoom in and then each puzzle has like many little puzzles in it. Like that's mm-hmm. that's one thing that, you know, that is not present in this game.
Okay.
And that's kind of a usability thing. It doesn't really make sense. And mm-hmm. I think it makes the game way more playable not having those two layers, even though that makes Space Chem interesting. Mm-hmm. It kind of falls in between, right? Like, so there are a lot of little micro, you know, operations that you're designing and building. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you do have to have a mind for the overall production. Mm-hmm. And so when you start, like, without having yet explained, like, what the products are like, you know, oftentimes, like, in one of the levels, you know, let's call it an example level, like, you're building a, like, a small, like, robotic tank. Mm-hmm. And so it has like a body, it has treads, it has a cannon, it has a radar receiver module thingy on the back. So it's this full product that you're building. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like in Space Chem, the game shows you a 3D prototype saying like you need to build a bunch of these. And it gives you also the parts you need. So you'll have like cargo containers and these giant mining machines. And then they output all these blocks of, you know, like metal mm-hmm. and, you know, like tank treads out of a cargo container, and you have to combine them all together. So, you know, you end up doing little micro optimizations like, yeah, how do you get the can, like, how do you hoist the cannon barrel up so that way you can weld it onto the body of the tank? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you also have to manage sort of high level things like, you know, how fast can I run this factory before one of these stages starts backing up, which causes mm-hmm. things to not get to the other parts of the factory later on in time. So you're sort of playing both at the same time and going back and forth, but in a much less frustrating way than it could be in Space Chem, where it's like, oh, I made a mistake at the high level. Now I have to go back and spend 4 hours, you know, reprogramming that reactor. It's much more casual than that. Much more enjoyable, I think.
All right. So you're not actually controlling, like, the factories themselves. You're just controlling, like, where their outputs are going?
What do you mean by not...
In the same sense that when you're controlling the reactors, you are controlling, you know, the rate they're producing things, how elements are coming into the reactor versus where the compounds are coming out.
You do? I mean, you control... So... In one way, yeah, like when you hit the play button, you don't touch anything, right? You're not physically building the stuff yourself. You're building a factory that then builds mm-hmm. these things. So that, in that regard, there is that sort of hands-off when it's actually running. Because mm-hmm. That's what makes it's a game about automation, right? So it runs hands-off. But in terms of what you have control over when you're building the factory, you actually have... I mean, yeah, the inputs are coming in at a fixed point, and the output has to get to, like, another fixed point. But everything mm-hmm. in between that is up to you.
Okay. Now, you mentioned about, like, hoisting cannons. Is there any, like, elevation challenges, or is everything running along
Absolutely.
The same? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, it's 3D. It is it is very 3D. Some of the, like, the early puzzles, you know, are a little mm-hmm. 2D. But honestly, like, right away, we really start. That was one of the big things from a design standpoint, was coming up with stuff that challenges in 3D. And so one of the things, this is sort of like a little geeky detail, I guess, but... So in 3D, you have three dimensions, right? And yeah. So you have the two dimensions that are like in the plane of the Earth, you know, like on with, you know, the ground, and mm-hmm. then you have the up dimension. And so the way we ended up designing it was that the like the two ground dimensions are interchangeable, which it would be weird if it was like much harder to go left than forward or something. So mm-hmm. they're two sort of interchangeable, but up and down is not. Mm-hmm. And so you actually the tools for lifting, for moving things in the Y direction, the up and down direction, are totally different from the tools for moving stuff in the other two directions. One of the big things is that stuff falls, right? So like you can't help but move stuff down in the Y dimension, but you know, like things you have to deliberately on conveyors move stuff in the X and Z direction.
Okay.
So there's a lot of the early 3D puzzles. They kind of rely on you like leveraging, like dropping things into place, just mm-hmm. super fun. Like it makes it so you actually have to build your factory into the environment, because there'll be certain parts of the environment, like you're doing, you know, you're not building everything in like an empty warehouse, mm-hmm. you know, you're building stuff in these environments on these like really like remote alien locations. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, like maybe like one planet there's ledges that are sort of naturally built into the environment. And you have to sort of use those ledges as parts of your factory and like, work, you know, integrate it with the environment.
Cool. Now, are there any like limitations the player has, like in terms of what they can place or limits of how much they can actually build per level, or is it pretty?
You build as much as you want.
Okay.
So that is not what makes it hard. That's the thing that a lot of puzzle games do, right? Is they say, they're like, oh, here's this thing that's easy, but you can only have two things to do it with. And mm-hmm. it's like, no, like you can build as many blocks as you want. It is, you just got to get it done, yeah. right? I mean, it's just like real life, you know, like you just got to do whatever it takes to get it done. Mm-hmm. The cool thing about that too is that it comes into the metrics, right? Like in Space Cam, you could do the, I don't know if that was one of your questions, but mm-hmm. you can jump to it really quickly. That, yeah. You know, like we had the histograms that showed your cycles and your symbols. Mm-hmm. And so the amount of, you know, the amount of tools that you had to use versus the amount of time it took for your solution to run compared to other people. And so we totally brought that back. I mean, that was one mm-hmm. of the best parts of Space Cam.
Yeah.
So the two metrics in Infinifactory are cycles, which is just like Space Cam, the amount of time it takes to build the quota. Mm-hmm. And then there's footprint, which is how big your factory is. But notably, it's not the number of blocks that you're using. It's how big, like how much area your factory takes up. Because, you know, like the implications being that if you were to take a whole bunch of your factory copies of it and duplicate it out, like how many could you fit inside of a production area?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the metric that we you can kind of imagine like tessellating factories to fill up a space. That's the metric for space. And it's really cool because it again ties in with that thing where it's different. You know, the X and Z dimensions are different from the Y dimension, mm-hmm. that because it's footprint, you can stack an unlimited number of stuff in the Y direction, like stack it all above it, and it only counts as one footprint. Right? But the second you put one block next to another one, it counts as a, you know, it doubles your footprint or whatever. So it's more interesting than simply minimizing the number of blocks.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and that was one of the more interesting parts of Space Cam, as you said, because people just came with some crazy solutions to a mm-hmm. lot of puzzles.
Yeah.
And it's always, like, fun when you finish a puzzle and you look, oh, I did, like, 50 cycles, and then you got the number one was did, like, 10. It's like, how the hell did they do that?
Exactly. So, and we're launching, you know, I mean, we're doing early access, but, like, one of the day one features is definitely histograms, leaderboards, friend leaderboards, not public leaderboards. But, you know, like, histograms and friend leaderboards right out the gate, super important.
Mm-hmm. Now, another bit of the charm of Space Cam that we talked about when you were first on the cast was how, even though the game had this science fiction and even chemistry theme to it, the building blocks of it was in terms of programming logic with the Waldos and essentially creating the factory plans for each of the reactors.
Yes.
With Infinifactory, we've talked about how you're building blocks, you're building these factories, but when you get down to it, does it have that same, like, programming theme to it in the sense that you're building a very complex set of orders that have to be run interdependently of each other?
It's a little bit less like programming,
mm-hmm.
but more so because programming hasn't gotten to be the way the game is yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're placing these blocks in a factory, and every single one of them is independent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can link them together. So some of the blocks, like the basic block is the conveyor. That's just a conveyor block that you put a block on top of it, and it scoots it off in the direction that the conveyor points.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a level that has 100 conveyors in it, and they all run simultaneously, right?
Okay.
So, you know, like, and then you have other things. You have pushers and sensors, and you can hook them up with something called conduit. And whenever the sensor detects a block, the pusher, and it, all the pushers that it's hooked up to will trigger and push. Mm-hmm. And they're more powerful than conveyors. So you can, like, knock stuff off of conveyors. And mm-hmm. And so, like, you end up creating this thing. It's kind of like a program, but every aspect of it runs simultaneously. Okay. So it's sort of like old, like relay programming mm-hmm. or like factory. I mean, really like factory controls, right? I mean, that's what it's inspired by. And it's actually much closer to the source material than Space Chem was with chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, that really is kind of how, like, old, like, automation stuff used to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the old factories, like when they started doing automation, like, I guess it would be early 20th century with, like, cars moving mm-hmm. things around. And it sounds really interesting. Now, with Infinite Factory, would you consider it like a spiritual sequel to Space Chem, or is
absolutely.
It...
Absolutely.
Okay.
It is the spiritual successor to Space Chem and Infinite Miner.
Cool.
Like, they had an awesome baby.
Now, when you were coming up with the concept for Infinite Factory, were there any other genres or sources of inspiration that you used for it?
So the original concept I actually came. This is actually kind of a funny story. Mm-hmm. So a long time ago, I made a game called Infiniminer, and that was before block games were a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And after Infiniminer, after we kind of wrapped up working on that, I was thinking, you know, like, what would be a really cool game to make with blocks? And I was talking to one of my friends, and we were talking about the idea of, you know, taking something like, you know, Manufactoid or whatever, like that was like an old factory game that we had pre-Space Chem. Mm-hmm. You know, taking something like that and making it 3D, where you're building these factories in 3D and you're building it out like, you know, like 3D, like three-dimensional complex products out of blocks. And I sort of tabled the idea. And after Ironclad Tactics, we were trying to figure out what we want to make next. And just added, we had a bunch of other stuff we were considering, but I don't remember what it was. Out of nowhere, I was like, oh, what about that game idea? And it just kind of made a lot of sense. You know, mm-hmm. after making something that was not remotely like Space Chem, we really wanted to go back and make something that was like Space Chem. Because I that's like my favorite kind of game, are these like weird engineering-y puzzle games. And pretty consistently, I've been doing like every other game I make is a weird engineering-y puzzle game. So it was about time.
Cool. And one thing that I love about the game is the actual story. So for people who haven't visited the Infinite Factory website, could you tell everyone what the plot is of the game?
Oh, yeah. I don't want to spoil too much, but... Okay. You were abducted by aliens, and that's, yeah, and that they're basically, you're enslaved by aliens, and they, I don't know how much I want to get into, let me think about it for a second, like what okay. we can say. So the basic concept, this is safe to say, because the story doesn't even really, the story is very, it's very first person,
mm-hmm.
and it's, there's a lot of stuff that maybe you don't realize what's going on, because you have a limited perspective of being, like, an enslaved, person enslaved by aliens, you know, and so the thing is with the aliens is that they're pretty powerful and they're not very creative, and so they end up in, you know, they end up enslaving a bunch of humans because of their problem solving abilities. So, you know, like being good at playing Space Chem or Infinite Factory or what we're good at, you know, it's a very human kind of thing, like to engineer and to design stuff. So they exploit that and enslave you.
Cool. Now, I don't know how much spoiler-wise you can get into this next topic, but one of the more interesting parts of Space Chem was when you had the boss levels, when you actually had to go beyond the general reactor mm-hmm. and compound making. Are there any like unique situations like that in Infinite Factory?
So there are, I can say right off the bat, there are no like boss levels
okay.
because those were the worst part of Space Chem. There, if you look at the graphs of people playing the game, like mm-hmm. if somebody was going to quit, it was probably because of one of those levels, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were really cool because they really told a lot more story than the average level does, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they were awful because they were bad from a gameplay point of view. And so there are no like straight up boss levels because like, there's a lot of reasons why they're bad.
Mm-hmm.
But we did a lot more of integration of the story into the puzzles.
Okay.
So and those I'm definitely not going to spoil because they are awesome. And but there are levels that like that you learn about the world just sort of by what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
kind of. And it's the game, like the story of the game is very, I really have no idea how it's going to be received.
Okay.
It's very like dark humor. Because that, you know, that worked really well with Space Chem, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Some people were like, this is a game that's just a programming game, but the story is really dark. And so some people didn't like it, but a lot of people really liked it. And I really liked it. And mm-hmm. so with this, we went with something that's kind of like really kind of quirky, but really kind of dark at the same time.
Cool.
I mean, you're being enslaved by aliens. Like, that's
yeah.
some serious stuff, right? Like, that's not, we're not doing, oh, it's not really fun times. It's like, no, it's serious.
Yeah. Now, I want to go back to the Space Chem boss battles for one mm-hmm. second. And I know you just said that when you were looking at the metrics for those levels, that a lot of people just generally didn't respond to it. And I was just wondering if you had a chance to actually like look into that and sort of look at why people didn't like those levels. Because as you said,
it wasn't that they didn't like them; it was that they stopped playing the game when they got to them. They never beat the level, and they never came. They couldn't proceed because if you can't beat those levels, you can't proceed.
As a game designer, when you were looking at people playing those levels and designing them yourselves, what do you think was like the major stumbling block behind those?
Why people do poorly on them?
Yeah, and why it was such a huge wall for a lot of people to get.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in all honesty, I mean, like, if you're looking at, especially a game like Space Camp, every level is a wall, right? Yeah. Like, you're not going to gain any players at any point, like, midway through the game. Like, you're only going to lose people. It's just a matter of how quickly do you lose people. And So every level is going to be, you know, going to put up a bit of a barrier that you're going to lose somebody at. But yeah, the boss puzzles were definitely like had the highest, they had the lowest completion rates. Some of them were as like, honestly, like as high as like 50%, you know, like 50, like if you managed to make it to that level, like half of the people who made it to that level stopped playing the game there. And like, if you just keep multiplying that out, like you get a very low completion rate at the end. But the reason why they were so hard, I think, was because, I mean, often they were like, they were difficult puzzles. Just like if you had to solve that puzzle without the whole boss shenanigans, right? It would be a difficult level. And then the boss shenanigans made it even more difficult because you didn't really know exactly what was expected of you. And that's a really bad thing, especially the game, like, you know, any game, really, you need to know what you're expected to do. And in a game like Space Chem, it's kind of complicated. Like, what you're doing is complicated and what your goals are is complicated. But at least you have the thing that in a level that says, hey, make this. You have these inputs. You have to make this. The boss levels were like, well, you have these inputs and you have to make this, but there's a bunch of options and you have to do it at the right time. And you actually can't even test out what is the right time to use an ability until you've already solved the puzzle. And then you probably have to go back and like change your factory, and you're probably gonna have to rip up everything and do it again. And like, suddenly you're just realizing like, holy crap, I just spent, you know, 5 hours solving this puzzle and this isn't even gonna work. I'm going to stop playing this game because it's bullshit. Like, that's what it's like. I mean, that's the experience that the boss puzzles had. And a lot of people were like, oh, these are so cool. But really, I think from like a gameplay standpoint, like they're also the ones that killed everybody in terms of playing it.
Yeah, I know when we last spoke about Space Chem, you talked about how a lot of people never even finished the game. I think I said that the first I got was Planet 4. Now, with Infinite Factory, are you building any like concessions or something to ease new players in or to help struggling players figure out the game?
So in Space Chem, we had a 2% completion rate. And I suspect that's over, like, that's too high. Like, there's, that's what, like, Steam says, right? Like, 2% of people who buy the game get that achievement. But there's probably people who play the demo who stopped playing earlier, too. So, so it's probably, like, 1%. It's very low. It's low for a lot of games. I mean, like, like Bastion, which I feel like is a very completable game, has only has a 15% completion rate.
Really?
Yeah, and what is it? Super Meat Boy is like around 5%. World of Goo is like around 15%. Space Chem's like 1 or 2%. You know, so like, no, you never get 100% of people beating your game, really. But it's definitely something you can improve. And so I think that the thing with Space Chem, it's like, there's two kinds of difficulty that you encounter in Space Chem, right? Or two phases, right? There's the initial difficulty, which is just like, I have no idea what this game even expects of me. I can't beat the first level, you know? It's like practically like the game could be in Russian, right? Like, that's, and you don't understand, right? Like, it's a very early kind of failure of being able to play. And then you have the second one, which is where you manage to get over that hump, but you just kind of burn out. Like, maybe, like, the game, like, the difficulty of the game sort of exceeds your ability to learn to play the game. And it just gets, that feels like it gets too hard. You know, the way I picture this kind of stuff is with like a difficulty graphs, right? Like over time, as you progress through the game and like kind of along the same graph, you can like on the same axis, you can plot like people's ability at the game. And if the difficulty of the game ever surpasses their ability, suddenly they're going to find themselves in a place where they're losing because they can't perform. And that's really where a lot of people stop playing games. And we actually did this really great workshop. We did some educational games and we did a workshop related, like in association with it, where they brought in some smart people who told us a bunch of stuff about making games. And they had like this really great model for just understanding game difficulty. And it was similar to stuff that we'd heard before, but it was data had backed up with a lot of evidence. And really the thing is that like there's a lot of places in your game where people are going to fail out. You know, there's the early mm-hmm. ones where they can't figure out the like the basic controls and how to play, and then there's the long-term ones where they just kind of burn out, mm-hmm. and it's kind of a gross oversimplification. But, you know, like, so with Space Chem, we have both of those very strongly as being problems. Mm-hmm. So the way we solve that with InfiniFactory, and I do feel like we've done, you know, well, time will tell, I guess, but I feel like we've done a much better job. How could you do worse than Space Chem? You know, so I feel like we've done, you know, much better job, because the overall, like, what the game asks you to do is a lot simpler. You know, it's mm-hmm. all spatial, it's all 3D, you can see it, you can, you know, you can touch it, like, it's all, it makes a lot more sense. It's just way more, like, just makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes to the overall difficulty of the game, we made it shorter and we made the puzzles a little bit less demanding, because, you know, on one hand, like, that was kind of one of the things that made Space Chem awesome was how hardcore it was. But I would say it was too hardcore if nobody can beat the game. Right.
Yeah.
So we tried to keep that same sort of, you know, they're still very serious puzzles. They're very open ended. You really have to solve the puzzle, but it's just a little bit less abusive mm-hmm. than, you know, than it was. You know, we didn't compromise, like a lot of puzzle games, you know, like Portal. I really like Portal, but I feel like a lot of their stuff is sort of contrived so that way you do solve it, because they want you to solve it and they yeah. want you to feel smart. Like, we did not go so far that these puzzles are pointing you in a direction. Like, you really do have to figure out a way that is your own way to solve it. But mm-hmm. overall, like, the pacing of the game is just less abusive and less exhausting.
Cool. Now, regarding difficulty and the player skill, it's a very interesting point, and it reminds you of a game that I've been trying to play lately, and that is 1001 Spikes. Have you heard of this game?
No.
It's a old-school 2E platformer, and the hook of the game is that it's all about just brutal death traps. Every level of the game has traps.
Spikes.
Yeah. And the thing is that it's not like today's game design where you're given like a clue or there's some hint about these death traps. They're all designed so that you won't know about them until you actually step on them or trigger them and then you die. And then you repeat
and then
the
you
level.
Remember.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's one of those games where, as you said, Zach, if the difficulty outpaces the player's skill, the game just really becomes more like work as opposed to learning mm-hmm. the game. You're just trying to get around, you know, the twist of the day. You're not really learning anything more from the game. You're just trying to, you know, put your head down and break through that wall.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel is the issue with 1001 Spikes is that it has that same kind of difficulty. You're not really learning the game by beating these levels. You're just, you know, getting through the things of, okay, now I gotta remember there's 3 spikes here, and then I get hit by a dark trap, and I gotta restart the whole level again. And as you said, if the game becomes too brutal, and it just completely overwhelms the player, they're not going to want to spend that time to learn it. They're just going to, you know, throw their hands up and say, done, you know, I got mm-hmm. 2 levels in, I don't want to see any more of it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely a risk.
Mm-hmm.
And something we're very, you know, sensitive to, I think, after Space Chem. It's just difficulty. We spent a lot of time thinking about difficulty and trying to think of, like, sort of how to model, like, difficulty and what makes games difficult and, mm-hmm. like, what different types of difficulty there are. And it's something we think about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Now, with the puzzle design of InfiniFactory, I was just wondering if you could talk briefly about sort of like your design philosophy when designing these puzzles. Like, how did you like sit down and actually create one of these puzzles?
So basically the same as Space Chem. Mm-hmm. So the Space Chem design philosophy was just designing, you know, just give you some inputs, give you an output, and maybe it'll be playable, mm-hmm. right? And it led to sort of this very like kind of difficult game, obviously, mm-hmm. but there's like a real like authenticity when it comes to solving it, that it really feels like you're solving a problem that needs to be solved, mm-hmm. because it was designed like just kind of without thinking about a specific solution, without a solution in mind. It like there ended up being a lot of different solutions, and it's just sort of how the game works, you know, is that like in real life, I mean, that's, I always compare it to like real life engineering, that if somebody says like, I need you to build an unmanned airplane,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, they didn't give you that goal with a salute. They're like, they wanted you to build this one specific unmanned airplane. It's like, no, they just wanted you to solve a problem and design something that meets those criteria. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of the thing that we strive for with our puzzle design. So we basically did the same thing with InfiniFactory, is that, you know, InfiniFactory is much more, I think, the products are much more creative, because like in Space Chem, we just looked up on, you know, I'd go on Wikipedia and look up chemical compounds yeah. and look for ones that had interesting shapes. That doesn't really work here, because we actually had to build all the 3D models to make all these block types to make stuff out of, you know, in 3D. And So we sort of started just sort of conceptualizing, like, what kinds of, you know, I mean, you're enslaved by aliens. You're making stuff for them, right? It's not for you. So what kind of things would these aliens have? And so we listed out, you know, sort of in accordance with, like, what the aliens were like and what their culture is like. You know, what kind of products would they need? What would they have you making for them? And then we did, like, a lot of artistic concepts of trying to figure out, like, what their aesthetics and styles are. And then just sort of tried to awkwardly make those puzzles. And I actually really, it was a really fun experience, because usually, like with Spacecam, I just sat down by myself just playing as a designer and came up with a bunch of puzzles. But now I needed to work with an artist. So we have our lead artist. I sat down with him and we sort of went back and forth where he would, you know, we'd stamp a couple blocks, like just kind of blank blocks out in the level editor, and then copy it into Photoshop, and he'd start doing a paint over. And then we'd just sort of, like, the both of us, like, push it in a direction towards something that is a puzzle. It is a shape that is interesting to build in a puzzle, but it also looks interesting and actually looks like something instead of looking like just like a pile of blocks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was actually it's kind of a challenging thing to do. You know, we're shipping a level editor, and I sort of worry a little bit just because it's a challenging, you know, it's a challenging process. And people who are using our level editor won't have to make their own art, but it's still hard building something that looks functional but is also an interesting puzzle to solve. But the cool thing is, at no point in any of that did I say, like, oh, I set up a solution, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I set it to make sure it was solvable. It's like, no, we just kind of made a puzzle that looked like a thing and then gave you the right inputs so that way you could technically make it. And then we threw it in an environment that was designed to be interesting, and then had somebody playtest it. We had somebody on the team who playtested the early version of the game, basically the first set of puzzles. And I think they spent like 80 hours playing, because so many of them were like impossible. And it's like, she didn't know they were impossible, so she went through and did it all, you know, and solved them anyway, you know. and so the game will not take 80 hours to beat, but you know, we just kind of have to do, you know, that was how we tested it, and that was we simplified a lot of them. There's a couple puzzles in specifically that I think we probably went through like 8 revisions on it, because it just kept on being, it's like, nope, this is still impossible to build, you know, like, it just it took a while to get it to where it is now, which is much more playable.
Now, in terms of, like, puzzle, you said that the puzzles were considered impossible. What was, like, your general criteria for a puzzle being either being impossible versus just being really, really challenging?
Sometimes they're literally impossible. Like, okay. The tools we give you are not, you know, like, the way the welders work is that you have, like, these two welders. If you put two welders such that they have two spaces in between them, it'll create a welder arc. Which allows you to do lots of really cool shapes, but you can't just weld anything. You know, you can only weld like two adjacent things. And so if you're trying to build a block with another block on each of the 6 faces, but no other blocks, it turns out it's actually impossible to do with our current tool set. Like, you just can't weld it. Okay. And so I didn't even realize that. It took me a while to realize. It's like, oh, wow, that's literally impossible to do. Poor playtester who spent 5 hours trying to do it.
Now, with the puzzle designs themselves, you said that you're not, that part of the charm of Infinite Factory is the fact that you're not building quote-unquote set solutions. You're just putting the tools together and saying, okay, here's what you have. You have this output. Now, you know, do whatever the hell you want to get there.
Whatever works. And it's that's a philosophy of my own, right? When you're making indie games and stuff, you can't afford to do everything like the right way necessarily. You got to do whatever works. Yeah. And that's very much what this game demands of you.
And I definitely find that interesting. As you said, that was a huge part of the charm of Spacechem, was the fact that the puzzles didn't have a set solution. My solution would be very different from yours, and et cetera, et cetera. And as you said earlier regarding having the metrics in there, that it gives, I think, your puzzle games a little bit more of a competition edge to it compared to a traditional puzzle game. And I know a few minutes ago you mentioned Portal, which I think is a good counterexample to the types of puzzle games that you like to design, Zach, by the fact that Portal, while it was a puzzle game, you had something to solve, you had a challenge to overcome. As you said, it was a linear solution. Everyone is going to have to figure out the same solution every time to every puzzle.
Yeah, or like one of two.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, well, the funny thing is they actually, so I know a bunch, like some people from the Portal team and who worked on it, and they really liked, a bunch of them played Spacechem and really liked it. And so they added histograms to Portal 2. But they don't work at all, because like they're not as prominent, obviously, because it doesn't make as much sense. But I think they're like number of steps taken and number of portals shot, and like it just kind of isn't the same. Like it doesn't, you know, It's more of like a speed run kind of metric.
Yeah.
You know, which is kind of strange. Like, it's not the same because it is like the puzzles are kind of linear and there's so much of a performance aspect to it,
mm-hmm.
where it's all about like how good are you with the mouse and it doing like the jumps and stuff, which is like, you know, admittedly it's a thing, but I feel like it's less understandable than like in Space Chem, where mm-hmm. you hit the play button and however long it takes the same amount of time every time. And then that's your metric. Mm-hmm. And it makes it just a lot easier to interact with that, like where people who aren't necessarily like, you know, quick with their keyboards, mm-hmm. you know, can interact with that and compete.
Yeah.
So it does work really well. I mean, that's why we brought it back with InfiniFactory.
Mm-hmm. Now, with InfiniFactory, we mentioned a few minutes ago regarding the boss design of Space Chem and how you moved away from having, you know, like essentially in opposition to you during those types of puzzles. With InfiniFactory's design, are there any levels that have, like, unique conditions or something to essentially mess with the status quo of the level?
Yes.
Okay. But we're not going to talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a big fan of things like that in general. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, breaking expectations is great, mm-hmm. right? And it makes things surprising and interesting. And I would like to do it more. I think that's something that, you know, I would like to sort of go back and retroactively add in if we can, like after we launched early access. It's just finding mm-hmm. more ways to subvert the paradigms. Mm-hmm. And that sounds ridiculous saying that, but you know,
yeah.
It's a real word. But yeah, like, you know, subverting all the expectations of the game. But we definitely have a handful of levels that do that, and those are my favorite. And mm-hmm. I think people would like them. But I'm not going to say anything else about them.
All right. Now, with InfiniFactory, in terms of like the design, another part that was sort of, I guess, a charm of Space Chem was like the achievement challenges. When you started to have like specific goals or specific optional goals for the player, I think there was one like get through a level with only two reactors or one reactor.
Mm, yeah.
Will there be any like unique challenges like that in InfiniFactory?
I don't know. I actually, you're the first person I've ever heard say that they liked them.
I found it was interesting.
Yeah. So that was, I mean, really, we wanted to add achievements because that was back when achievements were cool mm-hmm. or whatever. I guess they're still cool. That was back before I thought achievements were awful. And I figured, you know, if we're going to have an achievement in Space Chem, you know, it should be something related, like the kind of metrics. But the thing I don't like about them is, like, the game already has a reward system. We have histograms. Mm-hmm. We have friend leaderboards. We have something yeah. that's far more meaningful and far less arbitrary than a random threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the idea of being given a specific optimization goal is definitely, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if we should do it, because I don't want to ruin the magic of competing with yeah. other people and having like that sort of friendly back and forth and like having that be the goals and, you know, setting your own goal. Like a goal that you set yourself is way more mm-hmm. powerful than a goal that somebody else sets for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of I worry about ruining that magic by imposing arbitrary, you know, complete this in under 300 yeah. cycles. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the ones we'll add something like that. I don't, you kind of need like rewards when you do externally, you know, yeah. applied goals, and we don't really have that many rewards to give, so mm-hmm. I'm not really sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's yeah. possible, though. I mean, that's the great thing about early access, right, is that we could do anything with this game,
mm-hmm.
you know, after we find out from players, like, maybe players really do want something like that. We can just add it. We don't have to be yeah. like, oh, we should have added that. It's like, no, we can add that, and it'll be okay, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what I'm really excited about with early access.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's another very interesting topic regarding extrinsic and intrinsic rewards mm-hmm. in the game designs. As you said, Zach, with Space Chem and to an extent with InfiniFactory, because of the metrics and the friendlier boards and stuff like that, the rewards are more intrinsic because you're essentially competing with yourself in the sense that, oh, my puzzle, it took me 50 cycles to do this, but, you know, I see all these people did it in 25, so let me go back through my plan and see if I can make that better. But as you said, with an extrinsic reward, when you have stuff like achievements or even, you know, the new craze being Steam trading cards, it's a lot different mentality of designing these and in terms of hooking the player or that allure of getting someone interested in them.
Yeah, so the thing I'm most proud about with Space Chem and InfiniFactory is that it is all about intrinsic motivation, mm-hmm. right? Like, I kind of hate, like, the fact that this is a trend. I mean, it's unstoppable because extrinsic motivation, like, you know, combined with all these, like, unlocks and stuff that's, mm-hmm. like, very much in vogue now. Like, it's very mm-hmm. powerful. You know, lots yeah. of people make lots of money and make games that are really fun with that. But, like, I'm actually really proud that our games are so focused on intrinsic motivation. You set the goals yourself. You solve mm-hmm. the puzzles the way you want to. You know, like, it really, there's something that's really, like, you know, like really wholesome about it that I like. I think it's in short supply in the games industry nowadays.
Yeah.
But yeah, I the achievement thing is funny because we're doing Ironclad Tactics. Do you know about the achievement in Ironclad Tactics?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Ironclad Tactics has one achievement, and it's called RTFM, mm-hmm. and you get it for, I don't know if it says, like, yeah, for reading the freaking manual, and the way you get it is by, there's an instructions card in the deck editor the first time that kind of shows you how to add and remove cards from your decks, and you can right-click that card to make it go away, and that's how you get the one achievement in the game. And at first, we were going to add some achievements for, like, oh, like, shoot off 10 Zouave hats and mm-hmm. do stuff. And I'm like, you know, these are all really stupid. Like, the game already has its own reward system built mm-hmm. in. You unlock cards for being awesome. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's meaningful. Like, it's part of the game. You want the cards. You know, to add achievements to it seems ridiculous. And so I was like, you know what? Screw it. Let's make one achievement for something stupid. You know, for something that actually does make sense to have an achievement for, which is reading the instructions, which no one does. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was, and somebody, like, totally played into this and wrote up, like, this amazing achievement guide for how to, like, get 100% of the achievements in Ironclad Tactics. And it's, mm-hmm. like, really, like, overwritten. It's, like, really long just to right-click one thing, you know? But I really kind of hate achievements. But... Mm-hmm. For this game, I think what we're going to do is make some achievements that are totally unrelated to performance, that are just related to interesting things that you can do in the game. Because in Space Chem, there weren't that many interesting things you can do in the world. In mm-hmm. Ironclad Tactics, there weren't that many interesting things you could do in the world. But when you're in 3D and there's like blocks and like all this weird stuff going on, there's actually a lot of really quirky, weird things you can do. Mm-hmm. And so we actually have like a handful of ideas for achievements that I think are mm-hmm. suitably disconnected from the reward mechanisms of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I think I'm okay with that.
Cool. Yeah, I think for me with achievements, I'm not really huge into achievement hunting. You know, when people have like those really mm-hmm. crazy achievements, you know, kill 100 enemies with a pistol, you know, achievement there. I think for me, I prefer achievements that either reward you for going that extra mile or doing something, you know, very challenging, something that is going to take, you know, it's going to be worthy of an achievement.
Don't even get the point. Like, why not just make the game, like, reward being awesome? Like, that's the point. Like, you know, mm-hmm. that's what we try to do with all our games. Just make the game reward being awesome.
Yeah. And I think another part of that is if the achievements are really directly integrated into the game. An example that I like to go back to is the Binding of Isaac, which I thought they did a very great job of integrating the achievements into the progression model. Which for them, they basically
said... Is that how you unlock the characters and stuff?
Yeah, pretty much everything that adds new elements to the randomization was an achievement. So whenever you get a new item or you unlock a new boss, hey, it's an achievement. But I think with Binding of Isaac's case, that was pretty much... I think he said, like, similar to you, Zach, that he doesn't like achievements in his games. And sort of the achievements weren't really developed in the relation to the game, he just decided, okay, let's just make all the unlocks the achievements of the game. But it sort of worked by having that sense of, I'm unlocking the achievements, which are, in fact, unlocking new content. But he didn't really build the game like that to begin with.
Yeah. There's a bunch of people were really mad because we only had one achievement in Ironclad Tactics. Well, not a bunch of people, some people. Somebody, one person was like, no chivos, no buy, you know?
I bet that had to hurt when you read that. Especially
making indie games is nothing but a never-ending sequence of hurt. Get used to it.
That's the quote right there. That's our quote for the guest.
It's my life, man.
I just have a few more questions and then we'll move on to our next topic. With Infinite Factory, have you thought about any type of post-release or DLC-related content? I know with Space Chem, you had the additional maps, you had the Team Fortress sort of spin-off story there. Have you thought about any like additional content that hasn't made into the initial launch of the game that you're thinking about adding in some future update?
Absolutely. So a little bit of a backstory with our other games. Yeah, with Space Chem, we did a couple of free updates and just kind of kept adding stuff to the game. And that was where we got the TF2 tie-in came out of that.
Mm-hmm.
The custom levels was something that we added a lot later, being able to make your own levels. Mm-hmm. And then we sold a small DLC pack that we actually gave away for free at first as part of the Steam summer sale, mm-hmm. like years ago.
Yeah.
And with Ironclad Tactics, we wanted to experiment with selling DLC. And so we made two add-on campaigns, which were like little mini campaigns that added new levels and new cards, and we sold them for like $5 a piece. They're pretty packed.
Mm-hmm.
Really, probably wasn't worth it. I mean, like it gave us some content for like our deluxe edition to add to it, but mm-hmm. like, I'm not super happy with how it turned out. And so that's why within Infinite Factory, we are selling the game and we are not selling anything else. I have no intention of selling DLC. I want to do lots of free updates.
Okay.
You know, I want to release, like, the way the game is divided up into sort of planets, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, each planet has a theme or something kind of like a theme, and it uses, like, common tile sets, so that we don't have to make an environment for every puzzle, which would be ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So I would really like to create a couple mini campaigns. I really like the mini campaigns. I really liked the mini campaigns from Ironclad Tactics, but not the whole selling of this DLC part. So what I would like to do with Infinite Factory is make a handful of mini campaigns that have a little like mini story arc. We have audio logs. We didn't talk about story yet, but we have audio logs in the game. That's how we're telling our story predominantly, because nobody likes reading. And so what I would like to do is make a little, you know, like every month, you know, release a new planet with a handful of levels on it, and then like a little mini story arc told through audio logs or interacting with NPCs. And like just be able to release a couple of those, introduce new tools, new mechanics. You know, we're launching with a level editor out of the gate, but we'll probably want to add more stuff to that. I don't really know. I mean, I really don't know if people want more content made by us or more ability to make their own content. Mm-hmm. We will see.
Cool. Now, one last question then. With Infinite Factory, are there any, now we of course mentioned the leaderboards, friend lists, stuff like that. Are there any like cooperative levels or any type of multiplayer levels with Infinite Factory? I know with Ironclad you had the full co-op campaign, you had versus mode and stuff like that.
Yeah, we thought about it. Mm-hmm. That's definitely something we have not implemented that now. It would definitely be a stretch goal. Adding mm-hmm. network to stuff makes it a lot more complicated. Yeah. It's a possibility. I mean, it would actually not be that hard to add to the game, because you can't interact, like you can't like jump in the way of a factory and like stop the blocks, you know? Mm-hmm. So I actually think it is a possibility. If people were interested in it, it's something we would do. I don't know how well it would work,
mm-hmm.
because like even like Portal, you know, the co-op in Portal 2 is pretty playable, but mm-hmm. sometimes it's really hard just to communicate these sort of spatial positioning things.
Yeah.
And I feel like it would be really hard to play a co-op version of an Infinite Factory, because you'd have to have a really good way of specifying like, I need you to get this to this part at this time. And it'd be really easy to mess that up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really difficult in real life designing things on teams like that. You have to be really clear about like, who does what, and like who's, you know, whose sections, what their responsibilities are, and like sort of like contract, you know, contractual handoffs between these different parts mm-hmm. of a process. And that's a little heavy for a game like Infinite Factory. Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, this isn't like Minecraft where everybody can just run around and do whatever. Like, it's all about like, you know, building a logical flow. And I think a lot of people would probably, I think a lot of people would be totally be able to handle it, but I think it'd be really easy to get in these situations where stuff's just not working out because you can't communicate things in the way that you need to.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely something that's on our like potential feature list if a lot of people really wanted it, but I don't anticipate that being the thing that everybody wants.
Mm-hmm.
But if they do, who knows?
All right. So I think with that, let's move on to our final topic, and that is talking about the fact that Infinite Factory is going on Early Access.
Yes.
Now, this is your first game that's actually going to be on Early Access. Your previous titles have, of course, been full releases.
Yes.
So, what was the decision to make Infinite Factory Early Access versus a standard release?
So, the couple things we've just talked about, the last few topics, mm-hmm. you know, the answer is really, I have no idea what people are going to want.
Mm-hmm.
Like, will they want more content made by us? Will they want more content creation tools? Will they want more co-op or weird, like, game modes? I have no idea. Mm-hmm. And in the past, I used to have to try to pretend I knew and be like, no, I made the right decision. I really don't know. I have mm-hmm. no idea what parts of this game people are going to cling to. I would have never, you know, when we made Space Chem, I really did not think that anybody would like it at all. You know, mm-hmm. I have no idea what people are going to think about this game or what they're going to like about it. And I want to be able to, instead of having to think that I'm right and know what to do, just realize that I have no idea what people are going to like, and I want to adapt to what people like.
Okay. You know?
Like I've seen what other early access games have done. At first I was terrified of early access mm-hmm. because it's synonymous with crap, right? Like most early access games are far too early to be released. They don't look good. They don't play well.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, and I for a while I've said, you know, I literally have told people, they're gonna probably call me on it later, like I will never make an early access game. I've said that in the past, but it was stupid of me to even think that, because I always just assume that if you're doing early access, it has to be like an uncontrolled premature release, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I don't want Like, I don't want people to experience story content, like, in an unfinished fashion. And I always assume, like, oh, if we did early access, like, we would never be able to get the story. And it's like, oh, wait, no, we could just finish the story and then ship that with the first build of the game.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this stems from, really, because, you know, like, I have a lot of respect for our fans because our games are really, really difficult and mm-hmm. abusive. And anybody who likes that is pretty cool person. And, like, the people who buy your game right away are, like, your most loyal customers. You know, so like they're the people who are most looking forward to your game. Why would you give them like the crappiest version of it?
Mm-hmm.
It seems really unfair. And so the compromise that we found with early access is, you know, we're going to take the pretty much the thing that we would have released as a final product.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to say, well, it's not finished. It's early access. We're giving you early access to something,
mm-hmm.
you know, that is not, it's not done, but it's something that we're proud of. And if we never released another update for it, not that I'm saying we're going to, but if we never did, you know, it would still be like a legitimate product. It would be like a fully, you know, fully polished Zachtronics game.
Okay.
So it's really, for us, it's really about like what we get to do after we launch and focusing on that and properly telegraphing to people and letting people know that we are not done with this game yet. We want your feedback. Mm-hmm. Like we want to know what you think about it because we want to push it in the direction that you want it to go. We want it to be what you want the game to be. Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that's an interesting point about how you're taking early access with InfiniFactory, because as you said, most games on the early access are crap, and there are great exceptions to that rule. We have Prison Architect, we have Clay Entertainment with Invisible Ink. I know a lot of people are getting into Nuclear Throne, which someone just gifted me a copy, and part of that issue with early access is that there isn't really a standard. As you said, Zach, you know, people can put anything on early access. It could be a game that's either, you know, 99.9% done, or mm-hmm. it could be, you know, version 0.0001 alpha. We just put it together last night and we're going to try selling it. Now, with InfiniFactory, I'm just wondering, are you concerned about people looking at it and going, is this really a done game, or the general expectations from consumers when they see that early access tag on InfiniFactory?
I'm not remotely concerned, because I think they're going to take one look at the game and be like, wow, that looks great. Really, I mean, like, we've spent, like, there's not going to be anything unpolished mm-hmm. in the launch, you know? You're going to be able to look at screenshots, trailers, the Let's Plays, and it's going to look like a fully polished game, and I think that's what's going to tell people, oh, this is pretty good, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, this is polished. This is not a piece of crap.
Okay.
And I trust that that consumers are smart enough to differentiate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, gamers are savvy. I mean, like, people look at so many games, they play so many games, they can read a lot into it. You know, people can tell, like, oh, that's pre-rendered footage, that's faked, you know? Like, gamers are savvy. I'm not mm-hmm. worried.
Okay. Now, with the fact that the game's going to be in early access, I know a lot of people, they question about pricing. Are mm-hmm. you going to do anything in terms of pricing tiers or raising or lowering the cost over time with the game being in early access?
No. We're going to launch it at the price that it's going to be. You know, obviously it's going to go on sale years from now or mm-hmm. whenever, you know, like somewhere down the line there'll be sales, you know. But we're just going to launch it at the price that the game is. Because I think it's worth what the price is
mm-hmm.
that we're going to be charging for when we launch early access. And I think it's just going to become a better and better value proposition as time goes on.
Uh-huh. Can you reveal what the price tag is, or do you want to wait for when the game's release?
I actually haven't really nailed it down 100% okay. yet. So.
Not a problem.
A lot of one of the other great things about early access is that, you know, with other games in the past, we've had to like get everybody ready and like get everything primed, because once it comes out, there's not going to be anything else. But mm-hmm. with this, we're just releasing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you were asking before about a press copy. Like, we don't even have a press copy. Like, the press copy is going out, you know, on the 19th, hopefully, you know, and that's just our same old early access, because, you know, it's so ready, we don't need to hold it back and not give it to the public, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, that's just when it's going to become available.
Now, as you said a few minutes ago regarding early access, how before you were completely against it, as you were developing InfiniFactory, was the idea of early access in your mind from, you know, minute one, or did it sort of take root over the course of developing the game?
Oh, I'm pretty sure that I had my opinion of never releasing an early access game when I started this project. It was something that just kind of dawned on us like halfway mm-hmm. through, that we could do it, you know, we could do it on our own terms.
Mm-hmm.
And who cares what everybody else did? We can do it on our own terms. People will be able to tell what's going on. You know, we can. The big thing I was worried about was the story. So we just made it a high priority to get the story all in.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. So, yeah, nobody's, you know, if you play through the game, you're not going to, because there's some games that have like a half finished campaign and like, you know, like a poorly, like a story that hasn't been edited, you know, like, ugh, like I wouldn't, because the story you can only experience once.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, you know, we just made it. So it's totally solid out of the door.
Okay. Now, as you said a few minutes ago regarding releasing Infinite Factory on Early Access, part of that was because you sort of want to see what the consumers think of it and sort of have them guide what else you're going to add to the game.
Absolutely.
With Infinite Factory, in terms of future development, do you have like a set idea of how long you're going to support the game for? Or do you see it similar to Prison Architect, that as long as there's interest, as long as there are people wanting to play it, that you're going to keep supporting it?
Yeah, as long as there's money. I mean, that's the truth of it, right? Yeah. I mean, like, I would, you know, if the game was a huge success and people were interested in playing it and wanted more content, and, you know, we kept getting customers and we were able to, you know, we'll keep supporting it for a very long time. It's just a matter of, I mean, we, you know, we have to eat. What I expect is that I think this game's going to do okay. I probably shouldn't say that, but you know, I think it's way cooler than like Ironclad Tactics was, you know, just because we've really poured everything we know about making games into this. This is the best Zachtronics game ever. And I think that's safe to say. And so I'm really excited about it. I think we're going to be able to get at least like 6 months of pushing new content into the game. That's that's what I'm hoping for. It could easily go much longer. I mean, you look at games like Kerbal Space Program, right? They've been doing content pushes forever now, and it's like that would be like, if things went well, I would love to do something like that.
I mean, who knows what Kerbal Space Program is actually going to come out at this point. Same goes
and that's the thing, like, it doesn't it has come out, right? Like, to say when it's going to be like come out or be finished, like, it's never going to come out. It's already out and it's never going to be finished. And like, that's the funny thing, I've had this talk about early access with a lot of people, and everybody says like, oh, well, you know, you're doing early access, when are you planning to release the game? It's like, I don't know, it doesn't matter. Like, it's not about like delaying the release, it's about like software as a service, it's about making a game that lives, you know, like a living game. I wish there was a tag on Steam where you could just say this is a living game, you know, because early access, like, it's, you know, and the reason we went with early access, it's really about telegraphing expectations, right? You want people to be on the same page as you. We want like the people who play the game to be on the same page as us, is when we think about like what we want to do, that we fact that we want to, letting them know that we want to add stuff into it. When you see a game that's released, you really don't think there's going to be a lot of stuff added to it. But when you see a game that's on early access, people think, oh, there's more stuff coming. And so the biggest reason that we chose that is just to telegraph to people, like, there's more coming. Like, we're going to make this game so freaking awesome, you know? And telegraphing that. If there was one that just said, this is a living game that we're going to make better, but it's not early access, I would have picked that third choice, but there isn't, you know? So it's really not about when's it going to release. It's just like, when is it going to stop? Never! Until it does.
Yeah. I think that's a really interesting point just made, Zach, regarding having a title as like a living game as opposed to early access. Because part of the problem with Steam and the early access program as it stands, as we just said, is the confusion of having all these different games using early access in a different definition. As you said, with Infinite Factory, it's technically a full release. It's done in terms of all the content you want in the game, and you're using early access to say, hey, we're going to keep adding to it. Versus someone who says, we're using early access for, as we said, like 0.25 alpha.
As a crutch.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. And the reason I'm not worried, though, is because, like, look at KSP, right? And say, like, oh, did KSP suffer because it was early access? It's like, who cares? They're doing okay. So, yeah. It is interesting. I mean, that's really that's the part that inspired me the most with all the early access stuff and pushed me out of my hating it and thinking it was awful. It was just like realizing, like, you can do so much with a living game. Like, it's incredible. Like, the amount of reach you can have, the amount of interaction you can have with your players, the amount of fun that everybody can have. Like, it's really impressive. It's really cool. It's the future, right? It's really exciting. I'm really excited to be able to actually do that instead of just releasing games the old way, which is not the best way.
And I just want to clarify one point regarding future content that you have in mind for Infinite Factory. You said a few minutes ago that you already have plans for, you know, new planets, new puzzles. Are there
ideas?
Yeah.
Not plans.
Oh.
Yeah. Things that, yeah, we might do if people like it.
Have you thought about in terms of like new like machinery, new elements? Okay.
Absolutely. Every planet, like the planets all have new mechanics to go with.
Okay.
Them too. Yeah, I've got. I could list off a bunch of ideas we have, but it wouldn't make any sense because no one's played the game yet. So, awesome. Well, one thing we're gonna do is, right on day one, we're gonna launch. We use Reddit for a lot of our like social stuff, mm-hmm. and so we're launching a special Reddit that's a roadmap, mm-hmm. and so it'll have all the feature ideas that we have. You can go in and you can vote for the ones that you want to see and vote against the ones that you don't want to see, and that we're gonna use that to help guide our process of figuring out what we want to add to the game.
Cool.
So we're really interested in being transparent about all of that and letting people, you know, just letting people kind of know what we're thinking about and letting people pick what they're interested in.
Awesome. All right. I think with that, we can begin wrapping up. I guess just some general questions and then we will say our goodbyes. With Infinite Factory, I don't think we've actually mentioned this on the cast yet, but what is the actual release date for the game?
So we are targeting the 19th, so 2 weeks from today.
And for those of you listening, that is, of course, the 19th of January.
2015.
There we go.
Yes, that's the goal. We're really, the game's in good shape right now, but we have a lot of content coming in hot. So that's the sort of target right now. If that gets pushed out a week, I won't be sad because that's, you know, we're not interested in launching something that's not polished.
Mm-hmm. Now, as we've mentioned, the game's going to be on Early Access. Are you going to be selling Infinite Factory on any other digital platforms, or will it be Steam exclusive?
So it's Steam only in terms of, like, it runs on the Steam platform,
mm-hmm.
For now. We'll probably be selling keys elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
right? It's all through Steam because there's a lot of the features rely on Steam, right? Obviously, yeah. We rely on Steam for distribution. We rely on Steam for all the leaderboard stuff. We rely on Steam for the custom levels, the Steam Workshop. Like, we're really heavily invested in Steam as a platform.
Okay.
And so that's, in the future, there might be a DRM-free version. That's the kind of thing we'd let people vote on in the feature map. Mm-hmm. Just the only problem is that it takes out all the fun stuff.
Yeah.
Right? There's no DRM-free Steam Workshop. Like, that's the price you pay, I guess.
Yeah. All right. I think with that, I am just about out of questions. Are there any other topics or anything you would like to add about Infinite Factory or Early Access that we haven't mentioned yet?
We actually covered everything that I can think of.
Nice. All right. I think with that, we can wrap things up for this cast. I guess my last question for you, Zach, is do you have any final thoughts or anything you want to say to the fans listening?
Oh, you should go buy Infinite Factory when it comes out in 2 weeks. And you should email me or tweet at me if you have any questions, if there's anything you want to know, whatever. I'm here. We're doing this. This is happening.
Awesome. All right. So I think with that, we can wrap things up. Zach, again, it was a pleasure talking to you, and it really sounds like Infinite Factory is going to be a game to look out for when it's released.
I agree.
All right.
Thanks for having me on.
Yep.
It was a lot of fun.
No problem. And hopefully we can have you back on later on to finish up our roundtable discussion, because as I said on the notes, we kind of ran out of time for your topic.
Yep. I'm looking forward to that, too.
Awesome. All right, so with that, we're going to end things for the Perceptive Podcast this week. Thank you for listening, and as always, if you'd like to contribute to Game Wisdom, we have several options available. If you'd like to be a guest for a future podcast or write a guest piece for the site, you can find my email and information under Submissions Wanted on the front page, and that is also for our continuing efforts to do more roundtable casts. If you enjoyed the one we did at the end of December, we will be doing more of those, and we are always looking for new developers for that. And to contribute to our Patreon campaign to help secure monthly funding for the site, you can find all the information for that under the Patreon banner that's located on the front page as well. With that said, we're going to wrap things up, and by the time you listen to this, Infinite Factory should be just on its way out, so definitely keep a lookout for that. Thank you for listening, have a great weekend, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care.